Okay, welcome. You're listening to the Kraz Files podcast with Adam, and it's Saturday the 27th of April 2019 here in Sydney, Australia. Welcome. Look, as usual, everything's up on my website, krazfiles.com, C-R-A-Z-Z, krazfiles.com. Always posting so many articles up on that website, so please enjoy. Lots of great original articles going up that you won't find anywhere as well, so you can have a look at those, and all the podcasts I put up are, of course, on the website. They go over to iTunes and God knows where else, Podbean and so many podcasting websites. They're over there, so you can download them and find them there. I do put them up on my YouTube channel as well, The Kraz Files, so that's going well. And all the social media links for Facebook and Twitter are all connected to the website now, of course. I do put some of the podcasts over at real.video as well, but plenty to go through, lots of links, lots of people commenting on the website, so keep checking in there. Some great news feed widgets for Tot News Australia, Australia's Frontline, Renegade Tribune. You can also check out our other great website that I do with Dr. Rima Labo at the Natural Solutions Foundation, Open Source Truth, that was taken down by hackers I think about a week ago, but they've fixed it also. Great work over there, opensourcetruth.com. Now, great show coming up today. I've got independent journalist, analyst, publisher, editor at the Foreign Policy Journal, a book author and a writing coach, Jeremy R. Hammond, on the podcast with me all the way from the US. Great to have you here, Jeremy. How you going, buddy?
Good. Thanks for having me on.
I was just looking at your website a few weeks ago and some amazing articles that you're putting out, heaps of work actually, you don't seem to stop, but I haven't spoken to you before and sort of a new unique audience here in Australia as well. Tell us about yourself and how you fell into all of this, because I really appreciate guys like you and what you do, you know, guys like John Rappaport and yourself and others who are real independent journalists. We just don't have enough of that in Australia at all. I know in America you guys you have a lot more of that, but in Australia our media is largely controlled by people like Rupert Murdoch, you know, and his News Corp papers, which is like 70% of our printed newspapers, online a lot as well. So we and the alternative media are doing our best to connect and link up. We didn't have a lot of alternative media here in Australia. A lot of people seem worried or too scared or frightened to step up and speak out, you know, but it is changing. But what you're doing is really fantastic. You're out there, you got, doing this alternative journalism. It's really something that we need a lot more of. How did you get into all of this with all your books and everything that you're doing?
Well, it started after 9/11. I was, the September 11th, attacks in 2001, the terrorist attacks, I asked myself the question, why would people do this? And I consider myself to have been more knowledgeable probably than the average person about world affairs and whatnot. But I was still naive enough to ask myself that question, to not know the answer to that. And I was just dissatisfied with, the government's answer that it's because they hate our freedoms. So I started researching. I just started, spending my time just digging and looking at things and studying and reading books. And it didn't take very long at all to figure out what was really happening in terms of, what's called blowback and U.S. foreign policy in the Middle East, and particularly with respect to the Israel-Palestine conflict, and the influence of foreign policy. So I began just researching and eventually started writing about it. Started out just writing home, I was in Taiwan at the time, actually. I moved to Taiwan just after the 9/11 attacks. So I was over there, and I was sending emails home to family and friends. At that time, it was 2002 when I started doing that, and just warning people. They were, it was obvious that they were building up, using the 9/11 attacks as a pretext to invade Iraq. And so I was writing these long emails home, just explaining how the government was lying. There was no evidence that Iraq had any weapons of mass destruction or ties to Al Qaeda. Just kind of trying to debunk this propaganda that that we were being bombarded with. It helped me, being kind of outside of that propaganda machine, being in a different country and kind of looking at the U.S. from the outside. And just, you know, having internet, you know, kind of discovering the internet and finding alternative sources and things, you know. But I was very good at kind of connecting dots and analyzing and, you know, determining the veracity of sources and whatnot. And so I was able to see that, you know, we were being lied to, and trying to warn people. And that eventually somebody wrote back and he's like, why don't you just start a website?
You know? Of course.
So I did. And eventually in 2008, I launched Foreign Policy Journal. And I also have my own website, jeremyrhammond.com, where I kind of archive all my writings and you know, blog and do all that. And so my studies into foreign policy eventually led me into studying the economic system, because you really can't understand, you know, foreign policy without understanding the economics and, you know, the financial incentives and things of what's happening. So, you know, it led me to be kind of interested in economics. And so I kind of spent quite a few years studying that, wrote a book about the housing bubble and how it was caused primarily by the Federal Reserve's, you know, inflationary monetary policy and artificially low interest rates and how that distorts the economy and causes the boom-bust cycle. In 2012, my wife and I had a son. And so obviously around the time she became pregnant, I really began focusing on the vaccine issue and just researching. And I knew we had some big decisions coming up in terms of, you know, the question of vaccination. And so I began researching, and, you know, and the way I did my research was the same way I would research, you know, foreign policy or economics or something. You know, I try to go to primary source materials, and that meant looking at the medical literature and not just like looking at the CDC information statements that we get from our pediatrician's office or something, you know, like really digging into the science very deeply and looking, what does the science actually tell me about this? And I just was just struck so profoundly by the huge disparity between what I was reading in the literature and what we're told publicly by the government, public health officials, by our doctors, you know, who just get their information. They're not doing their own research like I was doing. They just get their information from the CDC and, you know, organizations like the American Academy of Pediatrics, industry-funded organizations. And in the mainstream media, of course. And the mainstream media essentially serve, you know, to, like Noam Chomsky and Edward Herman wrote in their book Manufacturing Consent, you know, they engineer consent for government policies, and that's what the media do with respect to vaccines, no differently than they did with respect to the Iraq war. And so it's kind of shifted my focus since to vaccines, and I'm now writing primarily about the vaccine issue because I just feel it's so important, and the people are being so blatantly lied to about it. And it's a very serious issue because it really is a threat to our health from public vaccine policy and the CDC's routine childhood vaccine schedule. It threatens our health and it's threatening our liberty because the right to informed consent is under assault. And it's getting worse. And as we've seen in New York and in places around the country where they're becoming really, really authoritarian in terms of enforcing vaccine mandates and things. There is a threat, a very serious threat to both our health and our liberty. And so my conscience compels me to really focus on this issue and try to wake people up because it's something we need to really take a serious look at, which, you know, the mainstream media is just not doing.
Yeah. Yeah, I know that. Absolutely. Your work's very deep, and I'd say today we'll stick to the vaccine agenda because yeah. It is so important. But yeah, I'd love to organize another show with you later on when you have the time to go over some of your other books, Obstacle to Peace, Exposing a Zionist Hoax, and all this going on in the Middle East, because it's very, very important. But it's two different sort of things. But we'll put up all the links anyway for that, for your website. But the vaccination issue, I'm pretty much the same, man. I'm just independently doing this, you know, I'm going my own way here. I had a little daughter as well. She'll be four this year. I already was doing this when we had her anyway, you know. So, you know, I knew what I was doing and where I was going. My family's all good. But it's a hard slog. I don't know if you've been well, we're pretty tied, Australia and America, but things are very extreme in Australia with the vaccine issue. It's really, really kind of crazy, actually, over the last few years. We had a whole program brought in called No Jab, No Pay, which you may have heard of. I think we're an experiment in Australia, actually. They experimented here with this No Jab, No Pay campaign, which, you know, cuts parents off from benefits and assistance, and it basically it just got sledgehammered in so quickly, this policy, and now it's taken up all over Australia, and it's really stripped people's rights, parents' rights. The media have been atrocious, you know, looking at all of this, and as I said, Rupert Murdoch's media, and we know about Rupert Murdoch. And how he uses his newspapers as a kind of a weapon, you know, to better his own agenda. But the No Jab, No Pay policies were championed by News Limited, which is Rupert Murdoch's media. So you just kind of can't believe that a big newspaper outlet company, you know, in Australia would change Australia's vaccination laws when there was nothing wrong with them. And they really came in very, very, very extremely aggressive in the newspapers, and they started that campaign, and they kind of turned everybody against each other and just put out mountains and mountains of propaganda and really hate speech and lies and all of this, you know, just nonsense, fear-mongering, scaring everybody. So I have a quote here from the main one, Jeremy, that came out a few years ago from Claire Harvey. She's a columnist at the Daily Telegraph, and she wrote an incredible article saying that parents who don't vaccinate their kids are baby killers. And that really changed the game here in Australia. And she says here in the article, imagine if ISIS unleashed a biological weapon on Sydney, a virus that killed children. There would be panic in the streets. We would all be howling for protection. And yet the anti-vaccine terrorists are allowing biological weapons, those deadly diseases, to thrive because they won't have their own children immunized. And she's talking about how we're all scared of terrorism right now, but there are terrorists living among us next door and in our Facebook feeds. And she says we need to make it a social crime to even talk about vaccines or question them. And so you can see, and that's only part of being what's happening, you know, and they're treating parents like terrorists, they're treating their children like lepers. We have this modern day segregation going on in Australia where it's almost like people aren't vaccinated, aren't allowed to ride on buses and things like that. And you'll get it in the US as well. And I was gonna talk about this with you and some of the solutions that you're coming out with as well from your website, and that people can get for free, and we'll learn about that. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on all of this, because really in Australia as well, they've really coined this anti-vaxxer term, and they've turned it into a weapon, as I said, against people. And it's got so bad to the, you know, now where I think the media just need to put anti-vaxxer in their headings. And I don't even think people are reading the articles because their minds are being made up for them, you know, by the media. So it's a massive social engineering campaign as well. And we have a lot of great people trying to help parents because it's dividing communities. You know, the husband or the dad or someone in their family might not want to vaccinate, but the mother might want to, or it might be the other way around, you know. The mum might be worried or scared to, and the family are pushing them. And then all this media propaganda is coming out, and it's tearing families apart. What's your idea on all of this? And you're obviously seeing it over in your part of the world as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of frightening what's happening, the way people have been so indoctrinated. And, you know, you notice it in the way people react just by bringing up the issue. The people have this strong emotional reaction, and they've lost their ability to just reason and to think logically about things. There's just this intense emotional reaction to anything that even suggests that vaccines might not be as safe or as effective as we're being told. And it's really become a religion. And I don't say that, you know, is hyperbole. I mean that literally. It's the vaccine religion, where, you know, there is the official dogma, and if you dare to question or dissent from that, then you are treated as a heretic. And so, you know, people are committing heresy by, you know, just even questioning. You know, and the label anti-vaxxer is applied to anyone who just even questions public policy. You know, there might be a mother who, you know, does all but one of the vaccines for her child, and she's an anti-vaxxer because she didn't, you know, maybe she didn't do the hepatitis B at birth because, you know, she's not a carrier, so her child isn't at risk. So why is she going to do the hepatitis B vaccine? But she does all the other vaccines. Well, she's still an anti-vaxxer, and, you know, in the public discourse, just because she didn't strictly and unquestioningly follow the CDC's recommendations. So, you know, I mean that really literally. It's a religion. And the problem is, you know, that what we're being told is simply not true. And we're supposed to believe that there's some kind of scientific consensus that, vaccines, plural, are safe and effective. Vaccines are safe and effective. Well, there's no such consensus, I can tell you, after spending, you know, hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands and thousands of hours, you know, reading the science. There's no consensus on that. There's all kinds of debate and controversy about vaccines in the scientific literature. I mean, this is endless controversy and debate about it, and it's this whole idea of some kind of consensus is totally absurd. It's absurd, but that's what we're being told. And we're being straight up lied to. I mean, public health officials, an example, a couple of weeks ago, some of the top health officials in the U.S., including the director of the CDC and the Surgeon General and the deputy director of the Health and Human Services Department, wrote an op-ed for the New York Times in which they claim that there are no toxic ingredients in vaccines. Well, that's a straight up bald-faced lie. Mm-hmm. And we know that aluminum, for example, is a known neurotoxin, completely uncontroversial. You know, you won't find a study saying that aluminum is not neurotoxic. I mean, it's just totally uncontroversial. But I mean, you have these health officials just flat out lying. And the fact that they can lie so blatantly and they know they can get away with it. They know they can get away with it because nobody's going to challenge them, because to dare to challenge, you know, U.S. public health officials about vaccines, well, that's heresy, right? So they just get away with lying and lying and lying. And then the media lie, too. The media take up the same role in trying to, you know, they're not doing journalism. They're doing public policy advocacy. And essentially, they're just saying, shut up and get your damn shots. Don't ask questions. Well, I'm sorry. I'm going to ask questions. And I'm going to look at things. And I'm going to think critically. And I'm going to investigate this for myself as a parent. You know, that's my duty. That's my responsibility to my son to actually, you know, look at what the science says and to think about what the reality is. And we can get into all kinds of examples, if you want, of how we're being lied to. But, yeah, I mean, that's essentially it. People are just being indoctrinated, and it's created a lot of fear. And, you know, it's funny. It reminds me of you. There's a great video on YouTube that I've seen. You know, somebody went and compiled a bunch of like TV shows, like, you know, snippets from TV shows back in the 50s, you know, like the Brady Bunch and the Flintstones and things, you know, and anything related to measles and how it was portrayed then back in, you know, popular culture back then in the pre-vaccine era. And, you know, measles was just a benign, mild disease. It was, you know, people were just so flippant about it. It wasn't this thing. And now we're supposed to believe that it's just horrible, terrible, deadly disease. And, you know, that we're supposed to be so afraid of it. But people weren't afraid of it. And that's one of the arguments that they make, is they say, well, you know, people don't get they don't do the vaccine just because they don't remember how bad it was, you know, because the vaccine is so effective and it's been done such a good job of eliminating measles. So they just don't remember what it was like. And it's like, that's not true at all. You know, people back then weren't afraid of it, but we're supposed to be afraid of it now. And so, you know, that fear mongering is really a big factor.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's amazing. I did a podcast last week with Jim West in New York. He wrote a book on DDT and polio, pesticides versus, you know, toxicology and all this sort of toxicology, pesticides, environmental toxicology and the virus theory and everything like that. He's talking about measles as a cover story for air pollution in Brooklyn, which is interesting. There's big smokestacks there, and the pockets of people that supposedly have measles are right in the line of those smokestacks. So it was an interesting piece that he wrote. But, you know, measles symptoms themselves are very broad ranging. I mean, it's, you know, rash or flu like symptoms, sore throats, all this kind of stuff. You know, sometimes when we don't know what really these people were exposed to, but the media will blow it up and have all these newspaper articles and scare the hell out of everyone that these people have measles. But where are the environmental and toxicology reports to prove that they actually did? I mean, it could really be anything. A lot of people get sick in winter, you know, because they shut all the doors and they put the heaters on.
It could be the
vaccine. Yeah, exactly. You know, they got gas on. It could really be anything. That's what I'm saying. I mean, Jim was also talking about the Disneyland outbreak there. As well with the measles, and he was talking about how they clean all the air conditioning systems with these pretty toxic stuff, you know, and people can breathe that in, and you can get clusters of people who are ill. So it's really smoke and mirrors when it comes to people who have the flu, because a lot of respiratory flu samples taken, I know, in the US, and that was through John Rappaport, they come back and they don't even have the presence of a flu virus in them. So you're like, what did they have? So the media are blowing up. It's going on here now. I mean, just on the Today Show on Channel 9, I think yesterday or the day before, they got these celebrity doctors up there. And you would think that you would need to, you know, honestly pack your bags, get your kids and the car and just head to the bloody hills, you know, because there's this measles outbreak and I can't find any. It's just, they're just absolute liars, you know, and they're doing all these reports and there's no debate in Australia. That's the horrifying thing. There's not one radio show or any mainstream articles or TV shows or breakfast shows or news segments or anything that is inviting someone like yourself or me or anyone on there, doctors who are talking about vaccine safety and freedom of choice on there. It's just them and they're calling it a debate, you know, and it's really, really getting crazy. Yeah, I know. I remember when I was little, I had the chicken pox and I think my dad said, did you put some tea tree on it? You know, I remember my brother had the mumps, I think, and it was just laughable. We were all still playing. There's nothing wrong with any of us. We're probably all healthier for it. Yeah, but it's crazy how much time, and I think it is like a cult now in Australia, and it seems that everywhere we look in this country, I sent you a video that Elizabeth Hart did. She's connecting all the dots. It just seems like, you know, our former prime minister, his wife, they have shares in the pharmaceutical industry, the media, everywhere that I look, and I've just been a fly on the wall, looking at all this madness going on, they're all interconnected with the pharmaceutical industry in some way, shape, or form. A lot of them are quieter connected in there, and we have health ministers, you know, former health ministers in Australia getting up on national television and saying that there's no risks in vaccinating your children, they're safe and they're effective. And you know, this stuff's going around the world. It's being picked up, you know, by Mike Adams and Natural News, and people are just shaking their heads at what's going on in this country because the politicians and health ministers or whatever seem hypnotized. And we've got, you know, vaccine damage happening all the time. And what's really disgusting, Jeremy, is that most people who are in these anti-vaccination groups, which are now being labeled terrorists in this country, you know, they actually vaccinated their mums and dads who are looking after vaccine injured children. They vaccinated them, you know, they did that at that time and they copped a horrible blow for it. The worst thing that can ever happen to you. There's many people like that. And because you don't get any compensation or any help in this country, you get basically ignored. You're not going to get any payouts. These people just don't have anywhere else to go. And so they'll go into these Facebook communities to link up with like-minded people and other mums to try and get some support and help. And then, you know, the media and the very people that push these people into vaccinating their kids in the first place will then turn around and call them anti-vaxxers and attack them, you know, and turn them into these bad people when they're just trying to get help. And it's really, it's really disturbing and disgusting. But, you know, just off the top of my head, Jeremy, we just had another vaccine case where a Sydney man died suddenly after getting a flu shot and his parents are threatening legal action. And the doctors, and this is from Channel 9 News, they actually pulled the family aside after he had died. And they said that we all know quite clearly what happened, but you're never going to get anyone to admit it. And so Lindsay Day, 39 years old, from Glenmore Park in Sydney, completely healthy, had to go and see a family or a friend's child in the hospital, and he got a flu jab. And a DTaP, I think. And then he's, according to his wife, to cut a long story short, he started to get bad flu symptoms and quite sick, and then collapsed, and then died and was declared brain dead 2 days later. So, you know, this clearly shows you that vaccines and especially flu shots are not safe and effective. They come with risks. They could come with, you know, potentially serious risks, side effects, adverse reactions, and the list goes on. And we're getting these zombified politicians and people sitting up there ignoring this and telling us that they're safe, you know. But this is a 39-year-old man brain dead 2 days after a flu shot, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, well, here, you know, go ahead.
Go on, no, you're right, I'm finished, yeah.
You know, here in the U.S., you know, while on one hand the government tells us repeatedly that vaccines are safe and effective, on the other hand, it administers a program called the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, which was established as part of a 1986 law called the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act. And what this law did was to grant broad legal immunity against vaccine injury lawsuits to pharmaceutical companies. And then they also established this VICP, the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, which is funded by an excise tax on every vaccine dose administered. So the effect is that what the government has done is to essentially to shift the financial burden for vaccine injuries away from the pharmaceutical companies and onto the tax-paying consumers. And so, you know, again, just to contrast those two things, on one hand, the government insists that vaccines are safe and effective, while on the other hand, it runs a program to shift the cost for vaccine injury away from the pharmaceutical company and onto taxpayers. So, you know, obviously there's something going on here. We're not being told the whole truth. And then, you know, public policy treats vaccination as a one-size-fits-all solution. But that doesn't take into consideration the fact that different individuals have different risks of the disease, you know, whatever the virus or bacteria might be that the vaccine is intended to protect against. Not everyone is at the same risk. I gave an example earlier, the hepatitis B virus. You know, most infants are not at risk for that disease, unless their mother is a carrier. They're not at significant risk, and you know there's different, and then the other part of that is that not everyone is at the same risk of injury from the vaccine. Everyone's immune system reacts differently. Some people's, you know, immune, so some people don't get immunity from the vaccine. For example, you know, when they say that, you know, two doses of the MMR vaccine is, you know, 97% effective against measles, so that means, you know, approximately 3% of people, even after two doses, they're not going, they don't develop that antibody response that is considered protective. And so, you know, that's called vaccine failure. That's right. And there's different kinds of vaccine failure. That's called primary vaccine failure, where you know, the person just doesn't respond to the vaccine the way it's intended. You know, people have different immunologic responses to vaccines. And this is individual variability. And there's also secondary vaccine failure, which is essentially waning immunity. The vaccine immunity wanes over time so that as you age, you become vulnerable again, which, you know, can shift the risk burden. That's happened with measles. It's shifted the risk burden onto adults and onto infants. I can explain why in infants if you'd like. But and then the same thing with chickenpox, you know, bringing that up again. I had chickenpox as a kid too, but now I'm at greater risk of shingles as an adult. Why? Because the vaccine has been effective at reducing incidence. And so I'm not getting re-exposed to the varicella virus, you know, the way I would otherwise likely be, you know, which would be a natural boosting effect of my immunity, which would protect me against shingles. That's why people, you know, typically your early childhood immunity provided, you know, lifelong immunity against that virus. But it can be, you know, becomes, once you're infected, it can remain dormant in your body, and it can become reactivated later in life as shingles. And so because of that loss of that exogenous boosting, you know, the people like me are going to be at greater risk as we age of shingles. So there's all, you know, there's all kinds of, and then, you know, there's certain children who are more genetically susceptible or environmentally, you know, they either have a genetic or an environmental predisposition to vaccine injury. And that's not a consideration. You know, some children, you know, just they're at higher risk. And so, you know, this one size fits all solution really plays Russian roulette with our children. And we don't know, the problem is we don't know who those children might be, and they don't, you know, all the research is really designed toward, you know, developing new vaccines and, you know, trying to, you know, trying to show that, you know, trying to, you know, assuage, you know, parents' concerns and things. And they do these retrospective observational studies, you know, like with the autism question, for example. The CDC claims on its website, vaccines do not cause autism. And if you go and look at their studies, every single one is a retrospective observational study. Well, if one of these, I'll give an example. The CDC also did an observational study a few years back that found that flu shot in pregnant women 2 years in a row with a pandemic H1N1 viral antigen, it was increased the risk of miscarriage. And of course, the CDC, you know, kind of downplayed that finding by saying, well, you know, this is an observational study. It doesn't prove causation. Doesn't prove causation. Well, neither does an observational study disprove a causal association. Just because it has a negative, it doesn't have has a finding of no association, doesn't disprove the association. It's just this type of study isn't designed to do that. And so there's this double standard where, you know, if the association is found, we're told, oh, but it's an observational study, so it doesn't prove that the vaccine caused that. Right. But then suddenly when it comes to studies that find no association, we're told that these are determinative. They're absolutely determinative. And we can conclusively, you know, say vaccines do not cause autism. Well, the type of study that would need to be done in order to really determine that conclusively is a randomized placebo-controlled study, which the CDC won't do. So it just there's so many lies and so much misinformation out there, and what people are being told compared to, you know, what science really tells us is just they're two different things. And you know, and that's really the big thing is as long as they're using, you know, they're treating vaccination as a one size fits all solution, you know, there are going to continue to be vaccine injuries, and this is why this issue is not going away, because parents, like you mentioned, parents of vaccine injured children, that's how they're learning about the fact that vaccines can be dangerous, is they're following the CDC's recommendations and their children are being injured. So this is not going away. This is, you know, it's just in the idea that they can just pass laws and enforce mandates and, you know, fine you if you don't get your children vaccinated, or, you know, ban you from public areas if you don't get your children vaccinated. This is not the solution. The solution is they need to do the science for starters, and they need to change the policies. They, you know, it's not as though the CDC is somehow infallible, that, you know, that its recommendations are the ultimate perfect way to achieve good health in a population. Why do we have so many, you know, children today with autoimmune diseases? Kids are getting diabetes or getting cancer. I mean, the rates of chronic illness is 43% in one of the studies I've seen. 43% of children now. And this is actually several years back, so it's probably increased since, but are chronically ill. Our children are sick. The entire population, they're sick. How is this, you know, but we can't question public health policy? It's insane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know, absolutely. It's it's crazy, man. We have Australian children have the highest food allergies in the world. You know, asthma and all this stuff's going through the roof. And I've said this so many times because I've spoken to doctors, Jeremy, on the podcast. You know, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny and Dr. Reamer and many others. I've spoken to a lot of people in Australia. I'm looking at it all myself, and you're seeing a lot of sick children. I'm seeing a lot of sick children now, you know, in the 1 to 3 age bracket. And, of course, when they bring in these draconian, sort of, I would say, forced vaccination, in countries like Australia, you get a lot more vaccines added to the schedule. We've had a whole bunch. We don't have as much as you do in America, but it's getting up there. We are getting a lot more than we originally had. I mean, I hardly had any when I was born, and my brothers as well, you know.
Do the Hep B at birth there?
Yeah, they do. Yeah, yeah. Yep, that's right. I said no to that straight away. I didn't have many problems. Ultrasounds are a problem for me. I think are causing a lot of health problems, genetically. But they did. They did push that on people, of course. And it doesn't make any sense. It's insane. It's insane. You know, I didn't want the vitamin K shots or even the prick tests or anything. I just got out of there as fast as I could. But
yeah.
It's crazy. I do speak to a lot of people, and you see a lot of people having healthy kids in the hospital, but something's happening there. Within that time, something's going wrong, and they're going back and they're sick or they're ill, and people aren't sort of saying, well, what were they given, you know? Did you get the Hep B? Something's gone wrong with your child, you know? But as I said, yeah, you're getting, as these rules and regulations and parental rights and our civil liberties and health freedoms get stripped away in this country faster and faster every day, and more states and territories take on these draconian vaccine mandates like no jab, the more new vaccines get added to the schedule, you know. And now we're seeing an autism spike in this country, like epidemic proportions. They're even starting to open up autism schools in Australia now. You have teachers and principals in high schools complaining that there's just too many autistic kids being dumped into the schooling system, and they're not equipped, you know, to really deal with this, and they need help. So you're getting all of this now, and the media and government are just telling you to keep going, keep moving, keep looking forward, don't question this. As you said, public health policy, it's the right way. We're telling you that this is right. Don't question it. And now we're getting all this censorship, on social media websites in Australia, where they're just chopping everybody off. And as I said, they won't allow any debate. Any free open discussion on programs where people can get up and have their side of the story told on the dangers, their worries about vaccines. Not even basic discussions are allowed anywhere in this country. And now you actually have morning radio breakfast shock jocks on, in Sydney radio, the biggest in the country, threatening to go out and punch people who don't vaccinate their kids in the face. I did a whole article on it. A guy on Sydney Morning Breakfast Triple M Radio threatened to punch people because his vaccinated daughter got whooping cough from another vaccinated kid in a school, but he wants to punch someone who has an unvaccinated healthy kid. And so it's honestly insane. You actually can watch the TV here, Jeremy, and they're actually up there saying, keep your unvaccinated kids away from our fully immunized kids. And you're saying that doesn't make any sense. If your children are immunized fully, then they shouldn't have a worry about. No. And they're saying these unvaccinated kids are time bombs and they could go off in the parks and everything. And I think that, I think, as I said, it's incredible social engineering. I think the papers now are doing the thinking for the general population. And I think that people aren't stepping back and critically thinking about this and saying, hang on, none of this makes sense. Let me question this or that. They're just going along because the papers are digging up all this kind of bully mentality in people, you know, that kind of crowd. So when the crowds get together and they bully, it's sort of like that. And now, as I said, they just put anti-vaxxer in big black bold header, you know, anti-vaxxers are this or anti-vaxxers are that. And people just go, yeah, anti-vaxxers, and they move on, you know.
Yep.
It's absolutely insane. And I've put up articles recently. You would know more about this. They're talking about in the US, there's a campus here, a clinic in Indiana University, where they're setting up these, MMR vaccines for students, and they're getting all these, outbreaks. They're saying 14 of the infected students here had been vaccinated, prior to their mumps diagnosis. This is over in your university campuses over in the US. Tell us about that, because then they're coming in and saying, to get more MMR shots.
Yeah, well, the mumps vaccine is, you know, evidence indicates is a complete failure. So mumps is part of the MMR, so it's measles, mumps, rubella. It's a triple combination shot. So one of those components is the mumps component. And it doesn't work. I mean, it wanes very rapidly and people lose their immunity. And so what it does is, again, it just shifts the risk burden onto adolescents and adults. There was a naval ship at sea recently, you know, and in the Navy, you know, they vaccinate everyone for mumps. And yet, you know, there was this outbreak of mumps on the ship. That was just a couple of weeks ago or last month or so. And yeah, it's a big problem. This is totally recognized, completely uncontroversial. I mean, it's totally recognized in the medical literature that, you know, that this is a problem and that the mumps vaccine is not working. You have the New York Times and the New York Times editorial, and then they're blaming anti-vaxxers for these mumps outbreaks when it's not, you know, where in an article from last year in the New York Times, it reported on a study acknowledging that it's not cause, this is the all of these outbreaks are not happening because people are choosing not to vaccinate. In fact, they're happening among people who've been vaccinated precisely because the vaccine doesn't work. And so, you know, the New York Times just ignores its own reporting to be able to blame so-called anti-vaxxers. So yeah, it's preposterous. And, you know, just the lies that people are being told, and it's frightening. It's frightening the direction things are going.
Yeah, absolutely. I have mentioned this article a bit. It's an important one. It's an older one. It's from the CDC website here. And I don't know if you ever read this one. It was pertussis infection in fully vaccinated children in daycare centers in Israel. And they went in there because they were all vaccinated and they were getting the whooping cough, and they were testing all these kids there in daycare centers in Israel who were exposed to a fatal case of pertussis infection. So it's a big one to read here. But in the conclusions, it's interesting. They are talking about the whole cell pertussis vaccine waning as well after a short time. And they're saying here that infection in a vaccinated person causes nonspecific symptoms. Vaccinated adolescents and adults may serve as reservoirs for silent infection and become potential transmitters to unprotected infants. Yep. So they're saying, yeah, even young, recently vaccinated children may serve as reservoirs and potential transmitters of this infection. This is from the CDC, folks. They're telling you. And we've had that here in Australia, you know, where some babies have been or supposedly exposed to. I'm a bit dubious about the parents being up there on TV and everything and pushing the you know, the pertussis vaccine and all these vaccines on the pregnant women now after their child dies. But we've had these cases, Jeremy, where the babies have got pertussis, I think, from vaccinated siblings, and they're blaming the unvaccinated community, and they've just gone berserk with it, you know? Then because you've got a dead toddler or, you know, a dead baby on your hands here, and the media pushing this, it really becomes, you know, a dangerous situation for everybody, because the propaganda really, you know, they pump it up on steroids there, and you're not, they're not looking at the science or the studies or asking, you know. Generally, with a few cases, we've found out that definitely the siblings were vaccinated with this. What are you seeing there with the DTaP, the pertussis whooping cough situation? Has been seen some bad moments, hasn't it? A lot of kids getting sick with this. Seems to be with the vaccinated community. But have you done a lot of research into the pertussis vaccine and how this may be happening and what they're talking about here? How it can sort of sit in people's throats, in the kids' throats, maybe? They harbor it, but they don't have any outward sort of display of symptoms, but they're carrying it around even after they've had the vaccine?
Yeah, that's correct. In fact, it was an FDA study that established that the acellular pertussis vaccine, people who get that vaccine, you know, we're told that you need to get this vaccine. You know, you brought up earlier, you know, how come you're afraid if your kid's vaccinated, how come you're afraid of unvaccinated kids if the vaccine is supposed to work? You know, but then the answer to that would be, well, we have to protect it, you know, the kids who are too young to get the vaccine, or they're, you know, having, they're immunocompromised or something, so they can't get the vaccine. So we, you know, there has to, everyone else has to be vaccinated around them to provide, to confer herd immunity. And we're told this with the pertussis vaccine, that, you know, everyone needs to get the pertussis vaccine to, you know, protect the infants, to protect the babies who can't, they're too young to get the shot. So we have to provide herd immunity. It's a complete lie, and government officials know that it's a lie. In fact, like I said, as I was going to say, it was an FDA study that established that vaccine does not prevent transmission. Vaccinated individuals can still carry and spread the bacteria. And in fact, that can actually increase the risk to younger siblings in the household because, you know, if they were unvaccinated, if the older sibling was unvaccinated and got a, you know, wild case of whooping cough, you know, they would probably be symptomatic. And so they would know to stay away from the baby. But the problem is with the vaccine, they're more likely to be asymptomatic. So they don't even know they're infected. And therefore, they pose a greater risk to the younger siblings in the household. And so, yeah, this is again a totally recognized problem that you know that older siblings and household members, you know, the mother, the father, and older siblings are now they pose a risk to infants in the household precisely because of vaccination and the fact that it doesn't prevent transmission. And so, yeah, you have all kinds of, you know, vaccinated kids who, you know, who can carry and spread it around. So, you know, the whole idea of herd immunity with that vaccine is we know it's false. I mean, that's not even controversial. But then with the whole cell pertussis vaccine, they don't use that anymore in the U.S. and other advanced countries. They still use it in the developing world, like in, you know, World Health Organization campaigns and things. And studies have looked at the question of mortality and childhood mortality with a vaccine. And of course, the assumption underlying that vaccine when it was used in the U.S. and wherever it's used was that, you know, since it would, you know, presumably would reduce the incidence of diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis, and therefore by doing that, it would, you know, decrease mortality among children. But studies have actually found that the opposite is true, that even though it does protect against those three target diseases, it still has increased the childhood mortality rate, so associated with an increased risk of death in childhood. And so the hypothesized reason for this have to do with the differences between natural immunity and vaccine-conferred immunity. And, you know, this kind of gets into that issue we were talking about earlier with the increase in autoimmune diseases and all kinds of, you know, immune dysfunction that we're seeing. Because vaccines tend to skew the immune system, you know, bias the immune response in favor of what's called humoral or antibody, you know, immunity at the expense of lost cell-mediated immunity. And so essentially what happens is you create this kind of immune dysfunction that can make you more susceptible to other pathogens. So even though, yeah, it might protect you against pertussis, for example, or at least in some limited way, it does offer some protection. But on the other hand, it can make you more susceptible to other diseases. And this is the explanation for why these studies have found this association between the whole cell pertussis vaccine and an increased risk of childhood mortality, increased rate of childhood mortality. So there, you know, and they call these non-specific effects, right? That's the scientific term for unintended consequences of vaccines, whether it's a benefit or a detrimental effect. They call it a non-specific effect. And another good example of that is the flu shot, because getting naturally infected with influenza, there's all kinds of viruses that can cause influenza, what they call influenza-like illnesses. And there's over 200 known ones that can cause, you know, pretty much what they call the flu. Like you mentioned earlier, you know, most cases it's not actually lab confirmed flu, but it might be diagnosed as flu, even though it was caused by something else entirely. There's all kinds of viruses, including many different types of influenza viruses that can cause the flu. And the vaccine is designed to protect against three or four, depending on whether it's a trivalent or quadrivalent vaccine, three or four strains of influenza. A lot of times they have to guess every year what strain they think is going to be in circulation, because it changes every year. The virus, it evolves very rapidly. And so every year they play a guessing game to try to guess which strains are going to be in circulation. A lot of times they get it wrong, the vaccine is ineffective. Even when they get it right, the vaccine is still, you know, pretty ineffective. And the thing is with it is that it doesn't confer the same type of immunity as natural infection. And so it's designed to stimulate this antibody response, this humoral immunity. But at an opportunity cost of lost cell-mediated immunity. And so natural infection confers a more robust immunity that not only protects against that infecting strain of influenza, but against other strains of influenza as well. So it provides cross-protection, which is a benefit the vaccine does not confer. And even It seems studies are showing that it even protects against other viruses. So one randomized controlled study showed that vaccinated people who got the flu shot, were at a higher risk of non-influenza infections. So things like, you know, rhinovirus, you know, common cold, or, you know, other types of viruses, they were sicker. And also, if a pandemic strain comes around, you know, like if it evolves, you know, pretty significantly one season, so that, you know, it's changed quite a lot from previous strains, you know, that's what's called a pandemic, you know, virus. And so getting annually vaccinated for, you know, getting the annual flu shot, can actually increase your risk, you know, in the event of one of the pandemic, strains coming around. So, you know, there's all these kinds of consequences and, you know, what they call non-specific effects that your policymakers just don't even take into consideration. They just don't even think about it. And, you know, and again, to stress that point of how we were seeing these epidemics of chronic illnesses, and including immune dysfunction. But, you know, and here we have a pharmaceutical product that's designed to permanently alter how the immune system develops and how it functions. But we're not allowed to, like, look at that and think, well, maybe one thing has something to do with the other. And to even ask that question is, you know, you're anti-science, and your country, you're a terrorist. You know, I mean, it's not quite that bad here. It's close. We're, you know, Paul Offit, one of the media's go-to so-called experts, you know, has written an op-ed in the New York Times calling people, you know, people who don't vaccinate, you know, are guilty of child abuse, as he's called it. So we have that in our country. It hasn't gotten so bad that we're called terrorists yet. But, you know, it's ludicrous. It's just mass insanity. Yeah, and just a totally, you know, people just aren't thinking. People just aren't using their brains on this issue, and they're just so indoctrinated, and they've lost their ability to think because they're so brainwashed, really, to put it bluntly.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. My nan, she's passed away now. She's a war widow. She was just in her early 90s. I think she was given a flu shot without my father's permission, but she developed terrible shingles. Which was a really interesting one after that flu shot. She was never the same again. It really knocked her around, you know. And I've never seen my nan with a flu in her life, ever. And just looking at that as well, what we were talking about before, that was switching things up here a little bit. We got so much information, but that was from Peter Doshi writing in the online British Medical Journal, saying that, you know, every year hundreds of thousands of respiratory samples are taken from flu patients in the United States and tested in labs, and only a tiny percentage of these samples show the presence of a flu virus. So people are sick for a lot of different reasons, and they keep pushing this terrible failed flu shot. In regards, Jeremy, what you were talking about there with the, you know, the immune system and everything, it's really crazy. I mean, I've talked about this many times. Do you know of another product on planet Earth that can injure and kill children, and they don't take it down? You know, like I've said this many times before, that you know you can get a product where someone buys in a supermarket a packet of cereal or something, and, you know, might have a contamination in it, or someone gets sick and they have to do massive product recalls. At Christmas time, you see it with some toys, you know, they deem dangerous for kids, and they just they wipe them all off the shelves. You know, we got seat belts to keep us safe in the cars. The government seem to be doing everything they can to keep us all safe. But, you know, anything with kids that harms kids, you really get a massive knee-jerk response from the government, from the community, from the newspapers. They dive in to help and get it all sorted out. Companies go down, there's fines, there's court cases, you know. But a vaccine will injure a child or kill a child. It's business as usual, isn't it?
Yeah, essentially. It's amazing. You know, in terms of design defects, that's one of the Supreme Court upheld legal immunity for vaccine manufacturers on the grounds, number one, that, you know, because the law in 1986 stated that the unavoidability of vaccine injuries conferred legal immunity, right? And the Supreme Court upheld that, saying that the unavoidability, that was their word, unavoidability of vaccine injuries is what confers total legal immunity, provided that, and there's two conditions, that, you know, the vaccine is accompanied by adequate warnings, which is the package inserts that come in the vaccine box, and also slipped my mind what the second one is there. Is manufactured according to specifications, and that, so that's where design defects comes in. There was a court case where that it was a design defect claim that the petitioner was arguing that. The vaccine could have been more safely designed, and so I think it was the DTP vaccine actually, and so I could be wrong about that, but the point being that was one of the things that the Supreme Court upheld, and so upheld legal immunity in part on the grounds that design defects are not a basis for liability, which name another industry where that's the case.
I guess collateral damage. They are the kids, aren't they? They're just collateral damage.
Yeah. It's collateral damage. They're just parents have to take one for the team. It's that's the attitude. That's the attitude toward parents of vaccine injured children. It's
a human being.
It's
man.
Sick.
It's just the way they're treated too. These families is disgusting.
It's just the cost. That's just the societal cost. And and people put the blinders on and they just look away and they just let's keep going. The momentum is moving forward. Going to continue this public vaccine policy, this one size fits all policy that plays Russian roulette with our children. And so it needs to change. And people need to wake up to that and say, look, the CDC is not infallible. The CDC can get wrong. In fact, the CDC. That's a whole other episode of the corruption and the lies the CDC sells. And people look at the CDC as some kind of authoritative agency, and in many respects it is. But when it comes to vaccines and its recommendations, it's got serious conflicts of interest, and that's probably a whole other episode. there's that whole issue. The FDA, same thing. The corruption and these agencies do not. Let's face it, these agencies are not working for the public and for our benefit. That's a consideration. Sure, I'll grant that. But they are essentially, they are the vaccine industry. You can't say the government doesn't oversee or regulate the vaccine industry. The government is the vaccine industry. In fact, if it wasn't for government intervention in the market, the vaccine industry as we know it wouldn't exist, if at all. Because again, the reason they granted legal immunity in 1986 was precisely because there were so many vaccine injury lawsuits that it was putting vaccine manufacturers out of business, which in turn threatened the vaccine supply, which therefore threatened public health policy, and public health officials couldn't tolerate that. So they granted legal immunity to ensure the vaccine supply so that their vaccine programs could continue. That was the whole point.
Yep.
So there's just this blinded, this myopic approach to, and then another thing that people need to consider is all of the financial resources that are put into and how industry money and public funds from the government skew the science. And, if there's a pathogen, it's like always the first solution that they look for is, well, let's make a vaccine for it. Let's make a vaccine. Well, they don't even consider, instead of starting with what vaccine can we make next, let's start with the question, well, what is it we want to actually do? What is the disease that we actually want to try to, reduce the societal burden of? And then ask the question, well, how can we do that? Not, well, what vaccine can we make to do that? No, how can we do that? Because there's other things to consider, how do we support our immune function so that if we are, exposed to a virus or a bacteria, that it's not going to cause serious illness. It's not going to cause a serious infection. You made a good point earlier about the flu, with the influenza and the flu, and how it's essentially a vitamin D deficient. It is a disease of vitamin D deficient. Why do people think that it happens in the wintertime? People are vitamin D deficient. It's not that the virus doesn't circulate in the summer. I mean, it's still out there. It's still circulating around. Maybe not as much, but people are still being exposed and carrying influenza and spreading it around. But they're not getting sick from it. Well, why is that? In the summer they're out more and they get more vitamin, sunlight exposure, and they have more higher vitamin D production. And so that's a huge factor just right there. Measles, is a known risk factor for measles is vitamin A deficiency. In fact, the World Health Organization uses high dose vitamin A treatment a treatment for measles in developing countries. So you know, it's never the question of how can we support immune function, you know, without having to do these, you know, these pharmaceutical interventions. I mean, just give the body what it needs to function. Proper nutrition, exercise, you know, sunlight, you know, reduce your stress, get plenty of sleep. All these things that people can be doing. If you're sick, you know, stay away from other people, you know, quarantine yourself, cover your mouth when you cough, you know, all these kinds of things that, you know, it's almost as though it's just, if there's a virus or a bacteria, they just want to immediately, you know, develop a vaccine to try to do something about it. And so because of this influence, you know, there's so much wasted resources when, if it wasn't for that, you know, they might be looking at other methods and other means of disease prevention that aren't even considered because of, you know, this influence of the industry and you know, the government money. So that's another huge factor, and just how it warps and twists the science and corrupts the science. It really, really it's a really corrupting influence. So, you know, there's so many issues that people don't even consider. You know, we've raised quite a lot here in this program.
Yeah,
you know,
there's so much.
Yeah,
absolutely, so much. Yeah, that's what our government have immunization handbooks, and it's all from the CDC there. That's where the information's coming from. And yeah, it's exactly. I agree with everything you're saying. I was told of a doctor as well, vitamin A for whooping cough. And if unvaccinated kids, they're healthy and their immune systems are good and they're fed well and they're getting sunlight and all this that you say, and they do get exposed to some of these things, then they'll be fine.
Exactly.
You know, if it's managed, it's not the end of the world. You know, it's not. It's really crazy how it's being blown up. But yeah, I agree with everything you're saying there. You're right on the ball. And we might just finish up with one of your papers, just the bullet points there, and mention these papers that you're doing. But you're probably aware, Jeremy, as well, that all these speakers are being banned from coming into Australia. It's really horrifying. Maybe not a lot of people are aware of that. Anyone who's coming in from the US to talk about vaccines or anything are just getting banned now. It's Dr. Sherry Tenpenny was a famous one years ago. She ended up pulling out because of death threats. Here they found out she was coming for a holiday, and some people asked her to do some speaking engagements. And then she just got these death threats from these troll groups. They're kind of science skeptics groups. One's called Savin, and they're involved with the media and everything like this. And they threatened her quite badly. I think the FBI got involved over there, but the federal police here didn't do anything. We just had filmmaker Joan Shenton denied entry into Australia. She made the film Sacrificial Virgins. She was labeled an anti-vaxxer when she's an investigator. She's not. You know, we have that just the list goes on. You know, the vax team, they stalked them around the country, the people who bought vaxxed here finally. You know, they threatened cinemas to hurt people in the public who went to see the movie. Nothing was done about these people who are making these threats because they're domestic terrorists. And Polytomy, I think they had their vaccine, they had their passport seized and banned from coming back to Australia for a year or something like that. Kurt Huckenlively was completely banned from coming here. David Wolf, who's a speaker in the US, he came here and they just stalked him around the country to make sure he didn't even mention vaccines at one of his events. Some of his events were blocked and he was basically ushered back out of the country, you know, and that's what's happening here. They've got this whole house of cards and it's so rickety now, and they need to keep maintaining the lie no matter what it takes. They've got to maintain this lie and keep that house of cards from tumbling down, Jeremy, you know. And they, you know, David Icke, international speaker from the UK, was just blocked from coming to Australia, and he's been here many times. He's been here many times to talk all around the country without a problem, but suddenly now they've blocked David Icke. And one of the reasons that he got from our government was that they didn't like his views on vaccines, his anti-vaccination views, which he probably wouldn't have even mentioned in any of his shows. They were just so paranoid that he was going to talk about anything, you know, about anti-vaccine information at one of his shows, they blocked him. So it shows you how paranoid the government are and how many people in Australia are waking up and they're getting access to information that we're putting out and what you're doing. That's why what you're doing is so important. It matters here because people want this information. And I think they're not going to be able to hold it off any longer soon. And it's just going to explode, you know, because they're just making it worse by blocking these people from speaking. Everyday Australians are saying, hang on, what are they worried about? What are they trying to hide? So they're shooting themselves in the feet here. But it's really incredible to watch. I think if you were living in Australia, you would have endless material. You would just be writing every second of the day with what you're seeing here. It's a massive criminal conspiracy, and it's got to go down. It has to fall. So I hope that it does. And I just wanted to talk about, before we go, about these papers that you release and how people in Australia, for example, can get access to them. You've got one here, 5 horrifying facts about the FDA vaccine approval process, which I was reading through. It's unbelievable. And this came through in the email. I wanted you to explain the bullet points of this and how people can get it, because I also read one of yours where you're giving parents tips, because you're a parent yourself, and you're talking about how they can deal with family members or friends who are trying to push them into vaccinating and all this. That was a really interesting paper as well, but they're great papers.
Yeah, you're referring to my newsletter there. So to get on my newsletter, you can head to jeremyrhammond.com/FDA. And that's where you can sign up for my newsletter and also download that report you're referring to, the 5 horrifying facts about the FDA vaccine approval process. And so, that's the newsletter I sent just, I think it was yesterday or day before, just kind of relating my own experience with my own family and, just the of the pushback I had, in terms of our parental choices.
It's weird.
Differing from. Yeah, and just being told that, being irresponsible or, treating our son like he's diseased or something. Even though he's the healthiest one of all the cousins in the family,
That's right. But only parents who don't vaccinate know that little secret, don't you? You can see how healthy your kids are. And it's like those vaccines are stealing their soul or something, Jeremy. It's like these vaccinated kids, heavily vaccinated kids, they're like bowling pins ready for the takedown. They just kind of...
Yeah, my son's immune system is... We jokingly call him Wolverine because he heals so quickly. And stuff just doesn't even affect him. There's been a couple of times when my wife and I were pretty sick. And, it's just like he's got... And he might have the same thing, but he'll complain about it. But he's still up running around, and he's fine.
Lose that sparkle, do they? That shine in the eyes,
always,
He's
always got that exactly. There's a sparkle in his eyes. That's right. So anyhow, you can go to jeremyrhammond.com. I know either on the homepage, any page of the site, you'll see sign up forms for my newsletter. But it's specifically jeremyrhammond.com/FDA. Is kind of the main landing page for that report, and get on that. And then I send newsletters like that, stuff I don't publish. I also publish a lot of articles and blog posts, but a lot of the content is really exclusive for subscribers. And so that was one of the letters I sent the other day, is kind of an exclusive to subscribers. I'm just relating my own experience with my own family. And on the other hand, on a more positive note, I have had breakthroughs with other family members, where I've kind of gotten through to them in terms of, getting them to not be so emotionally, they put up this emotional wall where they don't even want to hear, people don't even want to hear you. They don't even want to hear about anything, that might challenge their beliefs about vaccines, And so they kind of, it's see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil. And they just put these blinders on and they don't even want to hear about it. But I have had successes, and it's, I obviously am making an impact. I've been got quite an audience now, people who are on my newsletter and read my work regularly, and I'm glad to hear you're one of them. And this has really been, appreciate this opportunity to speak to your Australian audience. First time I think I've been interviewed for Australian show. So that's a really good opportunity, and I really appreciate it. And hopefully your listeners have gotten a lot out of this.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I'd highly recommend those for people to get these newsletters, because they're not small and they're jam-packed with information and well worth it. You're talking here about the FDA relying on, vaccine manufacturers' own studies. People need to read this. And as you said, people put the blinders on. I don't understand it. Anyway, we could try and get to the end of it and try and solve it, but they want you to keep your unvaccinated kids away from their vaccinated kids, and it's like, you need to think about what you're saying. Just calm down, you know? Think about what's going on. Just take a deep breath here. Yeah, people are getting hysterical, and it's the media whipping them all up into a frenzy with their propaganda and their lies, and that's what you're doing is really important, Jeremy. You know, this whole investigating, you know, you're a journalist there and going your own way. So really well, really well done on this. It looks like you're going in a pretty strong direction here with all of this, as you keep uncovering what's going on with the whole vaccine issue. And before we go, things got any better under Trump over your country in America, or is it getting more hardcore? Is it just maybe certain states, or?
Yeah, no, things have progressed in a very
they got worse?
Authoritarian.
People thought it was going to get better under him, you know?
Yeah, they thought he might establish that, you know, that commission, the Vaccine Safety Commission, you know, headed up. You know, people thought that maybe he would get Robert F. Kennedy Jr. to head that up and whatnot, but that went nowhere. And, you know, Trump was so – he was just basically made completely ineffective in terms of a lot of what he said, like, you know, like with saying that he didn't want to get involved in Syria and wanted to, you know, have a good relationship with Russia and all this. And he was just prevented from, you know, normalizing relations with Russia or doing any of those things because of the, you know, because of the deep state in the U.S. and the
a lot of control from Israel, too, isn't there?
Well, sure. I mean, I wouldn't say Israel controls the U.S. A lot of people think that. I think Israel is more of a client state of the U.S. But there is a lot of, in a sense, there's a lot of control because the Israel lobby is again another factor. But to me, the biggest factor with U.S. foreign policy in that respect is Christian Zionism, and does it require an outside influence to explain U.S. policy when, you know, congressmen themselves or congresspersons or, you know, they're ideologically Zionists. But it's just, there's just that that's a domestic influence. It's not an external influence. But that, you know, again, in a whole other show.
Yeah, well, I guess the state of Israel gets a lot of the blame, but yeah, you're talking about these Zionists. Yeah, a lot of money and power and influence. Yeah, in your government and all of our governments, you know. Australia's foreign policy is largely controlled by these people as well, you know. Israel as well, it is, you know. It's really crazy.
Agreed.
And I'm just getting your website back here. Jeremy had a freeze there, sorry. Yeah, it's there it is there. We are JeremyRHammond.com. Man, it's such a great looking website. You've done a fantastic job here. The articles look great. Anything you want to mention before we plug out today?
Sure, I'll just mention my other website. So JeremyRHammond.com is, again, where I kind of archive all my articles, blog posts. You can download that free guide.
Yep.
But I also am the publisher of Foreign Policy Journal, so check out foreignpolicyjournal.com.
Oh, that's the one. Yeah.
And then Obstacle to Peace, which is my kind of my magnum opus book, and my other books are available at obstacletopeace.com.
That's a big book there, Jeremy. Got a good review from Noam Chomsky.
He blurbed it, and there's a bunch of other people. Richard Falk, former UN Special Rapporteur in the Israel-Palestine conflict, wrote the foreword to it. It's got an introduction by Gene Epstein, who's a former Barron's editor. And that along with all my other books, are available there at obstacletopeace.com.
Absolutely. Well done. Great speaking with you today. Hope we can do it again sometime soon. As you said, yeah, the whole vaccine thing, it's a rabbit hole. You just fall down, you can't get out. I feel like with your work, it's good to offer solutions as well. I think that people are confused about this, and I think that the anti-vax and pro-vax community, sort of this whole infighting going on, sort of confuses everybody while, you know, the agenda continues, you know. I think it's good to offer solutions as well, which you're doing in these great newsletters for people. So I'll put all those links up so people can go and check it out. And great to speak with you. Please take care and keep up your amazing work, mate. You're doing a fantastic job.
Thank you.
Thanks, buddy.